coming down off of the high from episode 300 that Sally and I celebrated in New Ulm last week, we still found plenty of stuff to talk about as we continue our ebook series for church and school website content. We're focusing today specifically on forms and how to get your audience to talk to you. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 301 for Tuesday, August 6th, 2013. And joining me for the previous 300 and now the 301st, Sally Draper, where we talk about technology and ministry. You want to talk some more, Sally, about technology and ministry?
We just better do that, Martin. We have lots to talk about today. So yeah, onward we go. It's the afterglow of the 300th show. I had a great time filming that with you in lovely New Ulm, Minnesota. And here we are back in front of our webcams and in two different locations.
Yeah, I had a bit of a letdown. Not only did I come back from New Ulm with a cold, I really enjoyed the face-to-face and, you know, the guests that we had and the It's just not quite the same when you do it via distance, because there's, you know, the technology does have its limitations, and I think we do the best that we can, but still there's no substitute for, you know, kind of being in the moment. And that was really an enjoyable hour we spent.
Yeah, it was. And even a live audience to cheer us on. So that was kind of a first for Wells Tech. That was a lot of fun as well.
That was cool. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to try and figure out how to do that more often and or make this digital conversation even more analog if we can. So we'll see how that goes. But we do have a show in front of us, and that's episode 301, beginning the next 300s, hopefully. And we are in the midst of a summer series. One of our favorite things to do is just pick a topic and focus on it for the summer, something maybe a little bit lighter fare, something that, you know, we don't go through the entire, all the segments that we normally do with the show. And so that's what we've done with this ebook that we're writing. We figured that we talk all the time about technology, technology, technology. Let's write about websites, but not the technology of websites, but what goes on them and what that technology can convey and be used for. And we've done a number of chapters so far, beginning with, you know, the basics, and now we're into a section that we're calling embeddables, the ability to embed content. And up to this point, we've talked about embedding video and those kinds of things. But this time, we're flipping that around and we're embedding things that the user can send to us in forms.
That's right, Martin. The internet tends to be a one-way conversation a lot of times, where you're pushing information out. You have things to share. You want to have people watch your videos or, you know, read your great content, whatever that might be. But you don't really have great avenues for hearing from them. And that is until forms became very popular on web, on church and school websites. And we have lots of examples and ideas for you in terms of using forms to enhance your website and instigating that two-way conversation with your website visitors.
Yeah, and the creation of the forms is somewhat a trivial exercise at this point. Most content management systems, including the very popular Final Web among Wells Churches and Schools, has that built in. But if you want to ramp that up a little bit, a couple, just to touch briefly on the technology side, a couple that you may want to consider are Google Forms. That's a great tool, has the ability to be very flexible, writes directly to spreadsheets, customizable. and probably a little bit more flexible than maybe what Final Web provides. And then if you want to amp it up a little bit more, even JotForms is something that we use here in the Synod office. Can be free, but there's also a small premium account that you can get that'll give you e-commerce and those kinds of things. And that gives you branching and those kinds of things that allow you to create some very customizable or flexible forms to get the information that you're after.
You know, speaking of branching, it reminded me at Google Summit this summer, I learned how to branch Google Forms. Didn't know that was a capability.
Right.
With multiple choice answers, you can send them to different pages of your form. So that's cool. Kind of being interactive with what their responses are or whatever.
Sure.
The other thing I was thinking about as you were describing that was the idea of writing to a spreadsheet. And again, just more on the technical side of things, as you gather data from the web, you can think of that as like a record in your spreadsheet, a row of information that they've supplied to you. And oftentimes the data is stored in a format that works well with spreadsheets, which is really cool because once you gather all the data, you can easily sort it.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can feed it to,
stuff with it.
You know, word processing documents and do mail merges or whatever it may be. So, so yeah, gathering all that data is just kind of the tip of the iceberg in terms of what you can do with it.
Okay.
My phone's ringing.
So as mentioned, we're writing a book, and this is one of the chapters, and I've put together basically just three main sections, four main sections if you count the tips and tricks at the end. Really, the first one is entitled What's First? Because there's all kinds of things that you can consider, but really the first thing that you consider before you put a form on the website is what are you trying to collect? Don't ask for information just because you can. You need a strategy for all kinds of things. You need a strategy for how you're going to store the information, what you're going to do with the information, how you're going to analyze it, and if you're going to share it, and if you're going to share it in what way and in what format. So it's always really up to you how you do it, but if you ask people for information, always tell them what you're going to do with it, or people aren't going to give you that information. They say, well, why do you need to know that? So the ultimate purpose needs to be really hard-coded before you get into the creation of the form. And then once you have a strategy about what data you're after and what you're going to do with it, then you can proceed with the form itself. And then, of course, all the steps necessary to make that happen.
But you should be very careful as you're analyzing that data and what you want to collect from them. You need to think seriously about collecting any information that would be considered very private. And you guys have experienced this, I'm sure, but things like credit card numbers and social security numbers should not be submitted via an unsecured form. You need an HTTPS prefix on that page. You need encryption associated with any form that you want to use that gathers that level of private data. And I guess my caution is just don't go there. If you don't know how to
you
do that properly,
to.
Yeah, you don't want to gather that kind of data on your forms.
Other kinds of information you want to be very tender with are obviously any information related to children's names, ages, addresses, the connect, you know, that, and especially if that information may get public in some way. Obviously, income or tax information, even, you know, requesting a submission of passwords if it's not an encrypted connection, that HTTPS connection is probably a bad practice. Really, just ask yourself, If something bad could happen, if this data were to get in the wrong hands, what would be the worst scenario? And anticipate that and make sure you're taking care, you know, of those worst case scenarios.
Definitely. So then, you know, you've thought through your strategy, know what information you want to gather on your form. Then it's a matter of just designing the form. And we're all familiar with that technical side of things. You can have check boxes versus radio buttons, large text areas or single line text areas. You know, match up your needs and design your form to gather the information the most efficiently and to get you the data that you need. Big question then is what kind of things can you build with forms for church and school websites?
Yeah, and that list, Sally, is almost endless. I mean, we just jotted down a few things that came to my mind, but I'm sure every circumstance will vary, and you can find creative ways all the time. Every time I, you know, do a presentation on website development, I get, you know, more questions that I hadn't even thought of from the people in the workshop or whatever. But it can be anything like online donations, of course. Again, use an appropriate e-commerce tool like PayPal or something like that, guest books on homepage or even your live streaming page, flower donations, VBS registration, altar guild sign up, general event sign up, time and talent surveys, member information sheets. One that's kind of built into most blogs or blog comments, that's a form. So you're asking for a name and a comment. Bible study sign ups, surveys in general, site feedback. You know, how are we doing? Tell us how we could improve. What do you like? What don't you like? What would you like to see? Information requests. Now getting into some of the school stuff, school registration information, school projects, parent-teacher conference scheduling, home visit scheduling, script. A lot of schools have script. Meeting scheduling. Really, Sally, almost anything that you can transmit digitally and store in a list or a spreadsheet could be a good candidate for a form.
Yeah, one of my favorites you just mentioned is school projects. I could definitely see teaching a unit about survey skills to your students, maybe upper grade students, designing their own surveys and you know, inviting people to respond to gather data for a particular project. There's just lots of possibilities there.
Exactly. And then the last section of this chapter I called just a tip or two, and actually there's four tips. Maybe I really need to
rename
that.
Tip or two, or three or four.
Four tips that at least came to mind, and there's, I'm sure, more, is only ask the minimum amount of information to get the job done. You want to make this thing usable, and long forms or peripheral questions will lower your return rate as people will determine, well, they don't have enough time, or they're going to question why you have so many questions. So, you know, KISS, keep it simple. You really want to ask only for the information that you're actually going to use, not just because you can ask. So that would be tip number one.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how you numbered them, Martin, but I know keep the communications channels open is a good tip as well. I think you have it listed there as, you know, respond to the people that fill out your form, give them some feedback once they're done so that they know you heard them, and then, you know, follow up and respond further if need be, you know, thank them for answering your questions and supply them with information they're requesting, whatever it may be. Stay on top of your forms. Don't let them just kind of be ignored.
Wonder, yeah, exactly. What happened to this information I just sent them? Yeah, you actually took tips three and four, Sally, that's great.
Overachiever here.
I'll jump up to tip number two. Pay attention to the order of the fields and the order of the questions. Oh. Kind of group them logically so the visitor moves logically from one section to another easily without having to kind of backtrack. Let's say you add a biographic section at the beginning. You're asking name and phone number and email address. Then you have another section on something else. And then you jump back to some more biographic questions. Try and group those, and you need to do a little bit of planning, and some tools allow you to move things around. Some, you know, it's not quite as easy to move that stuff around. And then pay attention to what kind of field you're using for what, so that it's very intuitive. Maybe a good suggestion here would be try it out on a few people and see if it makes sense to them before you let your, you know, every member in the congregation, or you encourage every member in your congregation to jump in there and fill out a form. Do a little testing first so that you've got an idea of how well it's going to go.
Excellent ideas. Well, we can mark another chapter off on the book. We'll be adding example forms to our sample websites. So you want to check out the sample websites we're building along with the ebook. You can download the ebook in a variety of formats, ready for your ebook readers, either Kindle, Nook, iPad, whatever you have. We've got a format out there for you. So be sure and check out the summer series webpage. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Very good. Mm-hmm. So another chapter in the book, so they say. Let's move on to our picks of the week, Sally. What have you got for episode 301?
Well, I am kind of thinking about how I spent my week last week at Synod Convention and the fact that we rely heavily on mind maps to do our podcasting. But last week I wasn't sitting in front of my double screens and having all the screen real estate in the world and all the software available to me. Instead, I just had my little iPad in front of me. I don't know if you guys noticed that in our broadcast, but Martin and I were both using our tablets to kind of keep up with our show notes and where we were in the conversation. And for me, on my iPad, this application came in super handy. It's a free app from my friends at MindJet, and it's MindJet Maps for iPad. It allows you to create mind maps on your iPad, and it also allows you to open mind maps that were created with MindJet, which is the software we use normally on our desktop computers. So I could just port my mind map for last week's episode over to my iPad, and it worked really well. I was really pleased with the small form factor and the fact that it could be there with me, still keeping me on track as we were recording the show last week. You can zoom in and out. You can easily add and edit the mind map, and it's pretty intuitive to work with. Lots of gesture kind of controls associated with it, and I thought it was worth a mention here. I'm not sure if we've mentioned mind maps in the past, Martin. Probably MindJet has been a pick of the week, but I'm not sure if the iPad app has. So yeah, here it is now. Made it to the list.
I think we've been using mind maps since episode one, huh?
That's right. That's what keeps my brain straight. We put all our notes in there. We're able to collaborate on them, and that's really helpful. So
great teaching tool, brainstorming tool, note-taking tool, lots. It's a very versatile tool. I think sometimes in educational circles, there's kind of a flavor of them called graphical organizers, those just the ability to visualize and kind of have the big picture, which is really what we need, because we just throw a lot of stuff on the wall and then move it around or delete it or add stuff. It's a great tool. So
yeah, I definitely like the organizational capabilities, and then add to it the fact that it can be portable and on my iPad with me really sold me on the capabilities. So thought it was worth a mention.
Cool. Okay, my pick of the week. Let me do a quick screen share for those of you following along at home. And that is a very familiar tool, Gmail. And I don't know that I've ever had Gmail as a pick before, although I use it on a regular basis. All of my personal email goes through my Gmail account, so it's something that I use a lot. And they've made some changes. Some people don't. I haven't been real fond of the changes, but I have really been enjoying what they've done here. So essentially what they've done is they've added some tabs across the top. They have a primary tab, which is where most of your kind of your personal email funnels into. Then you have what's called a social tab. You get Google Plus and YouTube and Facebook and those kinds of things that go in there, Facebook notifications, etc. You have a promotions tab, which is where you get a lot of the, you know, like your Groupons and Google Offers and Zagat and, you know, those kinds of things. You have an updates tab, and that's just kind of follow-ups on some maybe shopping that you've done. So if you've made an order and you get confirmation that it's shipped, it goes in there. And then one that they're not showing here on their screen is a forums tab, and I've got mine listed here. It's actually works pretty well, so that when you have a new one, it flows in and gives you a little new tag. And if you find something that has gone into the wrong tab, it's really easy to click and to drag it right up into the right section that it should go on, and then future emails from that individual or company will go into the appropriate tab. Now, you only have these five to work with, but what I found is they make sense logically, and in some cases they give you some additional functionality where you can respond right to a forum post right within Gmail. You don't have to go to the forum, or you can respond to, let's say, a Google Plus post right within the social tab. You don't have to go to Google Plus. So they've integrated some things that make sense to integrate. And then your primary tab is for all that stuff that you are getting from individuals that you feel are important. So it's not the, you know, the spammier stuff or the stuff that maybe doesn't deserve first attention. Although if you get into one of these tabs and then you star it, that immediately sends it into that primary tab. So it's right in front of you when you open up Gmail. Another good part about the update that Gmail has done is on the mobile side, because you get that exact same experience if you're using an Android phone. And I think I haven't checked my iPad, but I'm assuming it's the same way there, where you get a new interface and you get these same exact tabs. So no matter what you're looking at, whether it's the web or your tablet or your phone, you're getting the same experience, the same tabs, and you can deal with things as they come in. Or if you just are like me, I was on the road almost all last week and last weekend. I didn't pay attention to any of these other tabs because I didn't have time to kind of stay up on social stuff or updates, forums, promotions. But I did want to stay up on the primary stuff, the stuff that individuals were sending to me that I wanted to pay attention to. So it made it real easy to get all that other stuff out of the way and keep the good stuff, so to speak, or the stuff that needed my maybe immediate or semi-immediate attention right in that primary tab. So I'm real impressed. There's a video if you're kind of suspicious about how things mm-hmm. will work there. So I think it's an improvement as far as I'm concerned, Sally.
Yeah, I did read a little bit of negative press. Just people don't like change, it seems. And, you know, yep. It takes some time to
have you seen
to understand. Yeah, I have it in place and I've been happy with it so far. I did read that if you wanted to turn it off, you could go into settings and turn off that.
But who knows how long that'll last.
Yeah, that's true. So eventually it'll probably be forced on you. But yeah, embrace change. That's what technology is doing all the time. So.
Yes. I mean, and Google has, I'm sure, done a lot of research on how people use email. So in general, I think this is a positive step. Sally, we ought to remind our audience about a camp coming up in September back in Ulm.
That's right. Closing in on just a month or so away. It's September 14th at Martin Luther College. We're going to be hosting Wells Tech Camp 2013. I'm really excited about this event. Every day, more registrations are coming in. So if you're a techie out there listening, we'd love to have you join us. One of the things I'm excited about are the giveaways. We've talked a lot about there being an iPad available. It's around here somewhere on my desk even. So it is in hand and ready to give away to one lucky person who attends. Another thing that's going to be given away is Mimeo Teach Bar, and I'm really excited to see these in action because a representative is going to be there. They're going to have a Mimeo Teach Bar set up in a classroom at MLC so we can try it out. It'll be kind of a playground. We can see what it's like. It basically turns your flat standard whiteboard into an interactive whiteboard similar to a smart board. And so that I'm really excited about. They're actually donating two of those. One of them will stay at MLC, which will be a wonderful learning tool for our future teachers to experiment with. And then another will be given away to a participant at the camp. The value is $800. So yeah, come and be part of the exciting giveaways, be part of the conversation at Wells Tech Camp. I have a really loud phone today, Martin. I'm really sorry about that.
So people sign up for this camp, Sally?
Well, all the information is on our camp wiki, which is at wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com. So you'll find a link to register there. It's completely free. Should be a fun day, and you get a lunch in the wonderful MLC cafeteria.
Better than free. Yeah, and I enjoyed those meals there all last week. Good food,
yep.
Good fun. You'll learn a lot, some good company, and you may win something, too.
You never know. So.
All right. We did have a lot of feedback over the past week, Sally. So what's up?
Plenty to share, starting with teachingbooks.net. We heard from Debbie Spriggs, your lovely wife, Martin, and she said, here's a great searchable link for literature instruction. Debbie teaches English, upper grade English, and thought this was an excellent site. I see that you can watch Meet the Author movies, Meet the Author book readings, audio name pronunciations. That would help me a lot. If I was a literature teacher, I'd be in real trouble. So just lots of interesting offshoots to the books that you're choosing to read. So check it out at teachingbooks.net.
Yeah, a lot of multimedia kinds of things there, which it's good to interject once in a while rather than just having the kids plow through the book, kind of that other stuff that gives the book a little meaning, a little life.
Excellent. Next up, I tagged an article that I came across in Wired magazine. There was an announcement from Google this week about Chromecast. Martin, you can give us some inside scoop, I bet.
Well, I don't have much insight yet, but I do have one. So this is the box. I can open up the box. That's as far as I've gotten. But so I've got a little device here.
It's a USB device, right?
It's a USB. No, it's not.
I'm sorry.
Yes and no. You actually plug it into your HDMI port.
Oh.
Power it via USB. So
okay.
You have a little cord that would come out the back. This goes into HDMI. And then you have the ability to basically send stuff to it from an Android or iOS device. So if you want to send a YouTube video or Netflix video, this gets it to your TV, kind of like a Google TV, so to speak, but working with a device, a tablet or phone. So I'll let you know how it turns out. I'll give it a try.
Yeah, we'll be curious. People were really excited about the possibilities. I know there's Apple TV and, you know, others in this space, but the price tag has never been this low. The cost of a Chromecast is just $35. So
$35, that's right.
That's not bad. We'll see how it goes. All right, the other article I tagged on Digo, it wasn't really an article, I should say. A web page I tagged on Digo is from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions. I received an email linked to a 30% off sale they're having on Shepherd Staff. So if you're ready to buy some new church management software and Shepherd Staff is on your shopping list, if you use promo code ISL, between now and October 31st, you'll receive 30% off the cost of Shepherd Staff. Thought that was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Next up, just a little feedback on our 300th episode. We heard from Mark Hafner, and he said, love the live Wells Tech broadcast. Looks much better than the small computer cam shots. We agree, Mark. Thank you. Too bad you can't do this all the time. Enjoying the daily summaries from Synod Convention and the interviews as well. Keep up the good work.
I think that what that says, Sally, is we're better when viewed from afar.
That's true.
No real tight shot. So.
Yeah.
We also did have a professional lead hitter in the producer's seat. So I think that has something to do with it too.
Thanks for your work, Clay. We appreciate it. We also heard from Cindy Krieger. Congratulations on reaching number 300. I've learned so much from the two of you and all your talented guests. God's blessings. So thank you,
awesome.
Cindy.
Thanks, Cindy.
We've learned a lot from you as well, and we appreciate you being part of the Wells Tech community.
Absolutely.
All right. There's been some activity on the Wells Tech listserv. It is a happening place. And for those of you that aren't familiar with the Wells Tech listserv, it is an email group where you can ask a question and get an answer from techies across the Synod. And there's bunches of them out there, and they're always willing to share their great experience. Ryan Rosenthal floated a question about iPad cases. He's just gotten some iPads in his school and was looking at ways to protect them. And a couple of people responded with the Survivor case from Griffin and also cases from USPlusU.com, which I thought was a really interesting case. It has kind of a hand grip on the back that you hold with one hand, and then it swivels so you can rotate the iPad in any direction. So
yeah, Debbie, my wife, was just asking me about a case for her iPad. She's got the one that Apple sells with kind of the accordion magnetic thing,
and
she wants to use her iPad more in the classroom and walk around and kind of send it to the screen where she can hold the iPad, but felt very uncomfortable just holding it with that accordion case. These would be a great fit for that, because then they're made to kind of be a grip. You know,
right, exactly.
You're more comfortable with it.
Like, so you've got a grip on it for sure. Someone else recommended that you look into Zag screen protectors.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you, Martin. I don't use a screen protector on my iPad. I had one on my iPod and decided to go without a protector on my iPad, but I don't hand it to kids and pass it around the room either. So
exactly.
Screen protectors are probably a good investment. So lots of links there for you to check out. The other question that came up on the listserv was about Google Cloud Print. Ken Becker wrote and said, is anyone using Google Cloud Print to share network printers at your school? Any advice, warnings, or best of all, fully formed documentation. And true to form, the listserv came through for Ken with links to documentation from Google. Connect your printers to Google Cloud Print documentation. There was some discussion around it, and somebody asked, you know, are you running it? I think it was Carl Henslin at St. Mark's in Green Bay that provided a lot of great information. We'll have links to those emails in the show notes. But he was running it on his own computer, kind of as the server in the scenario. Yep. But then through some searching and things, he came up with a link to the Cloud Print as a service, so you could put it on a computer to run. And so there's links in the show notes about that as well. Good stuff.
Sally, did they talk about cloud printing at Google Summit at all?
It didn't come up there, but it is an issue because you can't print otherwise.
for some classrooms.
Yeah. So this is good stuff. And I'm just seeing more and more activity around the Chromebooks. Lots of people are going through implementation process. And I guess that makes me maybe skip down in our show notes, Martin, to a Google Hangout invite that we received. Let's see if I have a page up about that. This page that I'm showing on my screen right now for those who are watching the video is a Google community. It's a private community. You have to ask to join, but if you ask, my friend Jason Schmidt will let you in. The title of the community is Wells Google Schools, and that's exactly what it exists for. Jason has done some teaching for Martin Luther College about Google apps and things, and he set up this community as an offshoot of his classes, but it now has opened it up to anyone who's involved with Google apps at Wells Schools and that kind of thing. And as an offshoot of that, he and Gail Potratz and Dave Tess are getting together to host a hangout. It's going to be next Wednesday, August 14th at 8 p.m. And it's about deploying Chromebooks. So the three of them have all gone through the deploying process, setting up Chromebooks for schools, and they're going to be sharing their expertise, kind of talking through some of the pitfalls and challenges you might run into and some of the ways that you can work around it. Here's the description they wrote up. Members of the Wells Google Schools community and anyone else who's interested in deploying Chromebooks for education is invited to join us for this hangout on air. Three experienced Google Apps administrators will talk about lessons learned and the basics of a small-scale deployment of Chromebooks for education. We'll show you the Google Apps administration console, as well as some of the changes that are in store for the next version of the console. So, sounds like a great hangout to be a part of. It's next Wednesday night at 8 p.m.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason, mm-hmm. for putting that stuff together. That's great.
Yeah, definitely. And then finally, it's probably pretty tiny on the screen, but we had a pin on our Pinterest board. Always excited to see things pinned there. This one is interesting. It's called the Modern Marketing Triangle, Three Keys to Success with Marketing, Social Search, and Content. Content is a big part of that, just like our ebook talks about, Martin. And I know it uses the word marketing, and maybe that's a word we would shy away from as churches or schools, but it's all about communication and getting that good news out, and marketing really is one way to characterize that. And so it's a pretty simple infographic, but it has some great information on it about search and social and content, those three keys to success. So check that out. And thanks for keeping those pins on Pinterest going. Good stuff.
Yeah. if you'd like to contribute to the show, many, many ways to do that. Of course, our show notes page is not only a great place for all the resources that we talk about and the feedback that we get on a week in and week out basis, but a way to leave your comments. WellsTech.wells.net is that web address. Similarly, WellsTech@wells.net is our email address. We're on Twitter, #WellsTech. We'll see it. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/WellsTech. Pinterest is there for you. Digo, Google+, the listserv that Sally mentioned. And last but not least, you can leave a voicemail. Just go to WellsTech.wells.net. And on the right-hand side of the screen is a link for you to leave us a traditional, semi-traditional voicemail.
Yep, we'd love to play your voicemail on air. So call in and tell us what kind of cool techie things you're doing in your church or school.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sally, what's up next week?
Next week, we are marching on with embeddable content in our church and school website content ebook. We're talking about RSS feeds, and this just really unlocks the web and the capabilities of adding things to your website with very little work for you, but lots of benefits of making use of all the great content that's out there. Wells.net is covered with RSS feeds. They're everywhere with all the content that's produced there, and you can easily include that in your website as well as content from other locations. So tune in and get some great ideas for content for your site.
Very cool. Thanks, Sally. Great 301, great start on the next 300 and or at least next 100 or whatever. We take it one step at a time here. So tune in next week for RSS feeds and all kinds of other good stuff. Leave us some feedback and enjoy the conversation. We do. Let's close the show with the music of one of our Wells musicians, Kevin Lersch, his song, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. Christ.